AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Welcome into the Swarmcast here on the ESPN Houston YouTube channel and ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. This episode is brought to you by Blue Star Tequila. You can find it near you at bluestartequila.com. Joe George, Will Kunkel here with you talking all things Houston Texans. Will, we're two preseason games in. We got a lot to get to on the show throughout those games, what we're expecting even more this season as the regular season's right around the corner. Looks like Matt Stafford might actually play. But we'll start with the trade because it's probably the most interesting thing I think that's happened. John Metchie traded to the Eagles. Were you surprised that that was the move they made?
No, I thought they were going to, like, I thought he was on the way out.
Yeah.
Because I thought he had a good enough camp and a surprisingly good camp. And I think there were just too many wide receivers. You're locked into Nico Collins, Christian Kirk, the two rookies, Braxton Berrios, and what he can do on special teams. Xavier Hutchinson is getting run with the ones. Like, he's had a very good camp. So it kind of came down to Xavier and Metchie because of what Berrios does on special teams. And Xavier just has had a significantly better camp, or the coaches like what they see more to give him more of an opportunity. But Metchie, like we talked about it a couple episodes ago here, there were opportunities that he should have capitalized on that he didn't, but he capitalized on enough to be the leading wide receiver against the Vikings, and he looked good enough in camp to now they can get something for him. And with Brevin Jordan going down, that opens up another spot to where they can kind of mix and match. And I was looking at this, too. This was kind of Kenyon Green and John Metchie for Harrison Bryant and C.J. Gardner-Johnson.
I think the Texans are come out of the win on that.
Yeah, for sure. And this is just John Metchie might be a better player maybe than Harrison Bryant. I don't know. But for this roster, like, that's where you have to tweak the individuals, and you're not going for best player available type deal. You're going for what you need to round out your roster.
Yeah, you need a third tight end. I think that was very clear that you didn't really have much confidence in behind Stover and Schultz, whoever the next guy was going to be. So you check that box. John Metchie now gets an opportunity to where he could be the third best wide receiver on the Eagles. Like, for him, he could pass Jahan Dotson as the third guy behind that team with Devonta Smith and A.J. Brown. So it's good for him, and I think it's good for the Texans. And you get you get your own fifth rounder back as well in this upcoming draft. So it's all good. I think that's the last of the trades we'll see. You never know. I mean, you could see more of this stuff.
But yeah, it might be like someone, depending how all these rosters kind of pan out, who gets cut, who's out there on the pile, any injuries, God forbid, in week four. Certainly no starter is going to be out there. At least there better not be. But you're right. Like, the big names, I think, have been moved, at least for the Texans' standpoint.
So looking back to preseason game number two, the offense out there for two possessions, the defense is out there from two possessions. We'll start with the defensive side. Derek Stingley Jr. has a pick that gets overturned. Just kind of a lollipop from Bryce Young. But then he has a big pass breakup on that one. And we saw Will Anderson all over the place. Right after his penalty, he's right in the backfield on a running play. We're seeing him make an impact on the second possession as well. He, of all the guys, him and Stingley, like, it was hard not to see them standing out big time in that preseason game.
They're the best players on the field at all times.
Yeah.
Like, they are the best. And I said, I said, defense, just do you. Like, there were things I wanted to see from the offense that you could parse it out by position group. It was so, like, specific. With the defense, do you. Do what you do and stay healthy. And Derek Stingley Jr. and Will Anderson Jr., those two guys I wrote down as well, were awesome. And that secondary is so good. But we talked about this last episode here on the Swarmcast. Will Anderson has got to finish plays. He got to Bryce Young, didn't wrap him up. Mario Edwards ends up getting the sack. I thought, well, you probably could have given him a half sack. I mean, he did everything but get the sack. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of stuff he's got to start finishing in the regular season. And then, like we talked about, the next thing. Not just the sack, the strip sack, and then the scoop and score. Like, he's got to start doing more of that. And that's not a knock on Will, like, before everyone freaks out.
Yeah.
No, like, if you want to be Defensive Player of the Year, that's what you got to be. And he's coming up for a contract soon after his rookie deal.
Yeah, it's more about, you know, that the strip sack and finishing it is it separates you from being, what, the 46th best player in the NFL top 100 to probably a top 15
100%.
Guy in the top 100. Like, yep. That's the difference maker. He's a top 50 guy.
Game
for sure.
Wrecker.
Yes, but, like, can he add that to his game? But, look, it's two possessions. It's a weird preseason game, too, because not only are you, it's preseason, but you're also playing one of the worst teams in the NFL. So I do feel like you still don't even get like a full look of everything of what the Texans can be. But for two possessions, it was just really good for the defense. Really no complaints, honestly.
Yeah, you want to do, when you're a good team, you have to do what you're supposed to do against the teams you're supposed to do it against. And they did what they did against the Panthers. And the Panthers, it looked like the Panthers were like, holy crap, this defense is like coming after us. Like this is uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It looked like the Panthers were extremely overmatched. And I don't know another, and I don't even mean that disrespectfully, and it's not against Bryce. It wasn't Bryce. Like, it was everybody and everything. That offense looked wildly overmatched. It looked like they were in two different leagues.
Yeah, and that's what you expect to see, right? Like, and throughout most of the Texans season, like, there are going to be a lot of games where that's how the Texans defense should make the opposing team look on a full four-quarter basis. I mean, it'll be different when you're playing a team like the Rams and the Ravens and the Chiefs and things like that. But when you're playing these lesser teams, you should be able to take advantage and prove that, like, the offense won't need to score a lot of points in some games this year.
Yeah, and Dave Canales, the head coach of the Panthers, he said that he wanted the offense, I was told, to play three series. He only had two, and then afterwards he's like, I wanted them to earn that third. Like, damn, I'm surprised they even got a second.
Yeah.
And now the Panther fans were off the train of Bryce Young. I tweeted out his stats, which were 0-for-2,
yeah,
a sack, like nothing. But it was not because he missed a whole bunch of open guys and wasn't able to do anything. Everything from start to finish looked bad. But I also promise this to all the Panther fans, like, that's, they're not going to look that bad in the regular season. They're just not going to be that bad. Don't sweat it. But I wouldn't be surprised if they played their starters in the final game, because they got to get that taste out of their mouth.
Yeah, you got to. Everyone's a little different. Like, some teams do it because they want to get through just the operation of just one more time of pregame through first possession. We'll see some teams do that. Some teams won't do that. So you don't want the Texans to be out there.
Hell no. The Texans, like, I've seen enough of this defense for one. If that's what we're going to stay on that side of the ball. Defensively, we have seen what they can do. They have dominated training camp. They've dominated two regular season or preseason games, and they have one more joint practice. I'm good on them being on the field.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything that could happen in this next joint practice that would change my mind from the defensive perspective.
What would you want to see?
You've seen everything.
Exactly.
What else do you need out there? It's just, besides that, all you're really risking at that point feels like injury, and which could happen anyways in a joint practice or just a normal day, but it's just an extra thing to where you don't need to push your guys to the defensive side. The offensive side, first possession, doesn't do much at all. You got a pass where, you know, CJ throws it more to the sideline. Nico's, you know, more inside the field, so there's clearly a misconnection there. So that first possession's kind of clunky. But then the second possession, we see really what the Texans can be. We see Nick Chubb running downhill against contact. We see CJ Stroud spreading around to Kirk, Higgins, the touchdown to Nico Collins. You see how they check all the boxes in the second possession. So first one's not great, fine. Second one, everything you could have asked for.
So, honestly. Yeah, let's focus on that second possession in particular, because the first one, that missed throw to Nico Collins down the sideline. A wide open, beat his man, bad throw. He hits that 9 out of 10 times, but there was good protection. Like, he stood tall. He just missed the throw, and he's not going to miss that throw. If that was like an Anthony Richardson, who, by the way, is not the starter for the Colts, as we learned.
Yep.
Daniel Jones will be starting for the Colts, which bad news for the Texans because it's the right move. Then you'd be a little worried, but CJ's making that throw. What you're looking at most is the protection and the arc around him, and it was good, it was strong. Going to the second possession, you saw everything like you mentioned. You saw the run game, you saw the pass game, but you saw the intermediate game, you saw the screen game, you saw the deep game. You saw a little bit of everything working for this Texans offense. And again, I don't care that it's the Panthers, because it's more about the Texans and them executing and being where they're supposed to be to get the job done. I wrote down a couple of like key words, levels. Wide receivers were on all different levels in routes. Their route tree you wanna do this again?
Yeah.
Like, guys were all over, like, people were over here, people underneath, people are out, like, everywhere for the Texans. So that's kudos to Nick Caley. Variety. We mentioned everything that they did offensively, where they had success of it, was all over the place in different ways. Protection. The protection was nails all day long. and moved bodies. The offensive line moved bodies from point A to point B, not A to negative A. Like, yeah. They moved bodies. They created gaps for where Nick Chubb, who I said last week, I'm not judging Nick Chubb until I see him in a game because he can't play behind his pads. He can't be physical. He doesn't break tackles in training camp. You're not wrapping up in training camp. You're not trying to bring him to the ground. You're doing what's called thud. You're hitting him, wrapping up, and then kind of like bowing out. This was an opportunity for Nick Chubb to break some tackles, and he did. He played downhill. He was physical. And I asked him afterwards, and said, like, is this how you can showcase who you are? He's like, yeah, because now I can break tackles. I can't do that in camp. And so we saw a lot from the offense that says to me, all right, like we're on track and we're continuing to progress.
Yeah, I think when you look at the big picture of the game, what you saw from Nick Chubb, what you saw from Woody Marks in this one, because obviously Joe Mixon is such a question mark at this point of when he could potentially come back from the Texans. The reports, the Nick Caserio words, are none of it is really providing any clarity about Joe Mixon, it feels like, at this point.
Thanks, Texans.
So I know. It's kind of how they operate. They're very Astros in that way, and sometimes not as bad as the Astros.
They're though. Secretive.
Yes.
The Astros are so open that sometimes it comes back and we're like, well, you said this. I'm like, well, you know, we don't know what's going to actually happen.
Yeah.
It's hard for that. Like, anyway.
But I think the run game is a positive. I think you can feel really good about where this team is going to start the season with Chubb, with Woody Marks. And that's not something I felt like, you know, going into the offseason, if you would have said Joe Mixon is probably not going to play for at least the first handful of games, you would be like, okay, well, the Texans will be able to run the ball or have something out of the backfield because you wouldn't trust Ogunbowale or Damian Pierce. But with what we've seen from Marks and from Chubb, you at least feel some level of confidence, I think, in the running game going into the start of the regular season.
Schematically, I don't want any of those guys like Damian or Dare being your every down back, but schematically what we've seen in the holes like the offensive line is creating, I trust any running back in there on a given down to have some success. Not every single down. Like Nick Chubb is your every down guy, and then we'll see what Woody Marsh can do. But schematically, and I talked this week to Ed Ingram, who had a start, and he's like their mindset, I'm telling you, when you guys listen to this interview on Kicking It with Kunkel, subscribe to the channel, it is wild how they're talking about this offensive line compared to last year. It is much better. Trust me.
It's
way
better. The vibes are different. The quotes that were coming out the other day from Arianti Urseray about the being a dog and protecting CJ and everything. It's like it does have a different vibe. Now we got to see it work. And look, it's inter squad practice. It's preseason game. But the videos that come out where there's one from the end zone view from a fan where CJ is just. He's just chilling.
Like he's
too
back.
Much time. Like he has so much time to protect him that like I'm like, okay, like this that's still an NFL roster on the other side. Like, yes, it's the Panthers. Like they're a 6-8 win team this year probably, and they have some guys. Are they great? No. But there's some proof of concept, I think, of what's been promised, what you've hoped for. We're slowly seeing executed in the offseason part of this, and it's checking the boxes right now.
And that's what I loved about the first drive and the second drive. But if you extrapolate throughout the entire game, what I loved the most is that they were able to sustain movement on offensive possessions several times. At one point, 4 out of 6 possessions, they had at least 2 first downs, if not 3 or 4. The ability to continue to move the ball by Nick Caley and for the offense to buy in, but just for Nick Caley to have the plays and have the adjustments and to be able to do it with the second stringers and the third stringers and the fourth stringers says a lot to me that this offense is in a significantly better spot than where the first stringers last year all season long couldn't have sustained success.
Yeah, and that's such a big difference because
it was
so bad last year at camp and it was a struggle early on. But now it's, I think we're in that mode where it's, okay, you talk yourself into a little bit about the Texans' offensive hype this year. You're playing a great defense every day. You're learning a new system. It seems to be getting better and better. And it's just not what happened last year at camp. It never improved.
Never happened in the damn season.
Yes. It was always just the same. The struggles were always there. They never improved. And they're improving at least. And that just gives you, again, hope for what you can improve throughout the regular season as they really open this thing up. And I really like what we've seen, what you said with Nick Caley. Guys look more open just in general. And that's something with Bobby Slowick's offense. It just felt like CJ always had to find a tight window. And now there are guys, whether it's CJ or Davis Mills, that are out there, or Graham Mertz, guys are open, and that just looks different than how the Houston Texans looked last season.
Yeah, it's a very different offense, mm-hmm. and the guys are believing in it. They're being put in positions to have success where they're good at those positions. And so this, I think hope is the perfect word. Coming into it, I was hopefully optimistic. I don't know. I had no idea what Nick Caley was going to do, but we've seen several guys not have success their first time calling plays or their mm-hmm. first time installing an offense. We saw Bobby Slowick have success and then lose it. Like, that's the craziest thing about Bobby that I'll never really be able to wrap my head around, that the NFL just figured it out like that and you had nothing to counter with. That's the craziest thing. So maybe we need to wait 2 years to figure out if Nick Caley
for sure
is really the answer. But right now, it is better to do well against a bad defense than it is to not do well against a bad defense. So for all the fans who are like, yeah, but it's the Panthers. Yeah, but it was too soon. Okay, fine. You're not wrong. But it's way better to say, hey, we did well when we should have versus we weren't any good, but it's only the Panthers, so who cares? Like, that's a horrible way to think about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, and my biggest counter to those people is just the people who are now wanting to hesitate about the offense and what they've seen in the preseason games and what they saw against the Panthers are the same people that are not at camp and just reading all the negative stuff coming from the media, and they're just assuming doom and gloom, right? It's like you have to pick your poison. That's my biggest thing with fans, with preseason. You got to pick a lane, you got to stick to it. Either it matters
yeah. Have
or it
some
doesn't.
Principles.
Yeah, like it either all matters or it all doesn't. And there really shouldn't be much gray area here, because if none of it matters, then you can say none of the struggles matter early in camp and none of the preseason matters. If it all matters, then you can really break down everything. But I think people just need to, like, you got to pick your poison on what you want with preseason and training camp.
Not only that, let's not forget that the Panthers whooped the Texans' ass 2 years ago amongst the Falcons and the Jets, three of the worst teams in the NFL that cost them home field. So they're still in the NFL. So yep. Spare me with the whole, it's the Panthers. It's not like they're not going to see them in the NFL, but, you know, I know they don't play this year. But the point is, they're going to play quote-unquote bad teams mm-hmm. in the NFL. There's no bad teams that just can't beat you. They lost to them 2 years ago with C.J. Stroud.
All right, look, this is a Texans podcast, so we got to talk all things Houston Texans.
Okay.
Right?
Uh-oh.
Hackgate 2025.
Oh, my
okay.
God.
What is that? I think it's crazy.
I've got thoughts.
I use this, and I try not to incorporate my original fandom too much, but I use the example on my show on 97.5 of, you know, I grew up in Chicago. I'm a Cubs fan at heart. Like, am I supposed to be angry every time a player in Chicago throws out a first pitch or wears a White Sox hat? And it's like, I can't be, because half right. of them do it. They pick it. So, while I understand the Astros and the Mariners are in this tight playoff race, I can't believe some people are so upset about it, that it's been happening.
I think it's up to the individual, right? Like, if you live and die with the Astros and that's your team, and you're like a Texans fan, and you all of a sudden you see like your quarterback wearing the team that you definitely hate right now, I can see you having a moment of like, what the hell are we doing? Like, you're in Houston. You're our quarterback. Like, what am I missing here? So write them off or something, whatever. But at the same time, I think Houston is a city where you can kind of get away with it. This isn't New York wearing a Boston hat or Boston wearing a New York hat. It's not Philly wearing a Mets hat. Like, it doesn't piss me off, but I get it. And then some people tried to say it's two Americas, like one wears for swag, one wears for, like, teams. I've seen that just completely blown up on X. Like, there's a lot of people that had a problem with it. I was surprised at how many people truly had a problem. Is it a true rivalry, though?
I mean,
like, that's kind of my thing. Like, it's the right now.
Yeah, it's the right now. I do think
it's not historically like Red Sox, Yankees, Mets, Phillies, Cubs, Cardinals.
Yeah, there's some stuff there. I mean, with Scott Service and everything, like, there's been, you know, the Hector Neris versus Julio Rodriguez stuff that happened, 2 years ago at this point. Like, it's getting there, actually, I feel like, a little bit. I feel like there's some tension. I feel like there's more tension between Astros-Mariners games than Astros-Rangers games.
I was going to say, would you rather them see it wear a Rangers hat?
Definitely not.
See?
I think people will be upset. But remember, Jalen Hurts represented the Astros when he was in Philadelphia. So it goes both ways.
And a lot of people are just, like, some people, do you think Stroud should have done it?
Okay, this is what I also said. I said, if I worked for the Texans, like if I was Omar, their head PR person, I probably would have said, hey, bud.
Heads up.
This is a bad idea,
yeah.
Or don't do this again. And honestly, I bet you CJ Stroud won't do it again.
Even and sport, he'd probably be like, for why?
Yeah, because they don't care.
No.
Like, they don't know. Like, they're...
By the way, he's a Dodgers fan.
Exactly.
And like way worse, right?
Yes,
worse.
Way worse.
Like, so you actually have no problem with his fandom, but you have a problem with what he's just wearing from a color standpoint.
Yeah. Now, if the Astros and Dodgers play in the World Series, CJ's going to have to choose the Astros.
I don't think he has to. I don't think he can. He has to pick the Dodgers.
You shouldn't pick the Astros.
You have to stay strong of I'm from that. That's my team. I think.
Pull Marshawn Lynch. I'm just here so I won't get fined.
Yeah. But I think Houston fans are smart enough to know that not everyone that plays for the Texans or the Astros are from Houston.
Yeah.
They're from other places. So I think it's fine I think it's better and cooler, more fun if CJ's like, listen, I love the Astros. I love Houston.
Yeah.
I'm from LA. Like, I'm a Dodgers fan.
Yeah.
They get it.
I just, it's so funny.
You gotta claim it.
It even ended with him having to get asked about it at the press conference.
Of course.
It just made me chuckle. I was like, I can't. I'm like, this is such a preseason thing, because it was a regular season game, no one's, unless they won, if they won by 30.
I don't know, if you're in October and you're playing,
yeah,
it might be worse.
But it was, it's Hackgate 2025.
It's interesting though, but Houston, you cannot, this is one of those things where you say have your beliefs or not. I believe that in certain cities, you cannot do that.
Yeah, I think you can kind of get away with it in Houston.
Yeah.
I think there was a large...
Which I think he did.
Yeah, and there was there was a lot of people who were upset, but that's also one of those social media things, and it's blown over. We're probably the last people talking about this.
Yeah.
I hope so, at least. If you're still talking about it and you're that upset, I got some people you can call.
You'll be all right.
Let's talk about this upcoming season. Or is there anything else from training camp or preseason that we didn't hit on?
My episode with Damon Arnett on Kicking It with Kunkel, I don't know what's going to happen with him. I don't know if he's going to make this roster.
He's looked good.
He has looked good. I think at the very least he makes a team in the NFL. But remember, he was banned by the UFL because of the legal issues that he had. And I don't make light of them. We had a good time talking about his interception and then his fumble and how he needs to hold a football. But you want to talk about a really cool opportunity to have a comeback story where he failed several times and it sounds like he gets it. It sounds like he's really leaning on his faith. He's leaning on certain players in there that are helping him corral some of his demons, if you will, and just being it sounds like a good dude on and off the field. So that's one story to watch. And then Ed Ingram, who I have on Kicking It with Kunkel as well, his mindset of getting better and his awareness that he was a bad pass blocker in Minnesota. He said, I was bad. I went to Cole Popovich. I said, this is where I want to work on. I was a bad pass blocker. I need to be better. And he took me through the steps of how Cole is coaching him to become better. If Cole has that ability to permeate through the offensive line room and individually coach guys where they need to get better, this line can go from, for argument's sake, from a 1 to 10. It can go from a 3 up to a 6, 6.5 if you individually just tweak people just enough. And then I asked Ed as well about the aspect of the offensive line playing as a unit. He said, that's what it's all about. We play as a unit. We can do some special things. Even if individually we don't have a great player, we have the ability to be that much better. So what we've seen in training camp this year from the coaching aspect and what potentially could be a great story with Damon Arnett has been really cool so far.
Yeah, that's that's where the argument of, addition by subtraction with Laremy Tunsil plays into a lot of this.
I've said it from day one, I thought it was. It's becoming even more obvious consistently how much of an addition it is by subtraction for Laremy Tunsil. And again, it doesn't mean he's not good at pass blocking. He was. But there are so many other things that he detracted away from in that room. And he was liked. It wasn't a culture thing. It was not a friction thing. No one disliked him. He just was not a leader. And you got to be an alpha and a leader at that position and in that room, especially when you're the best player, the highest paid, et cetera, et cetera. Every day that goes by, the more people I talk to, it's even more clear.
Well, and even the players who are going to be upset about it, they'll also see it, come to fruition throughout the offseason.
I don't know that they don't want to admit it.
Yeah, they don't want to admit it maybe early on, but because I know Titus had a couple tweets after of just I think some shocked emojis and things like that. But as it starts to put itself together, they'll start to buy back in too, and they'll get it. What do you think the offensive line looks like right now? What's your best guess?
Right now, I think they're close. They're close to being. They're on their way to being good enough. That's not good.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot to be desired there. There's a lot that we have yet to see because we haven't gone up against a true defensive line in a real game that are throwing. I also asked Ed Ingram about this. How are you getting better as a unit of twists and stunts? Because that was the most mind-boggling situation for the Texans. They couldn't figure it out. And I asked them, okay, so last year, I don't know if you know this, but this offensive line was really bad at picking up twists and stunts. How are you getting better? And he took me through how they're actually doing it. And they did it today when I talked to him, being the Tuesday before they released this. They talked about it in individual drills, how they're getting better. So I think they're on their way to addressing the issues. They're on their way to trying to become good enough. Not good, not great, not fantastic, but good enough to give them a chance to be good enough to help that defense. Because as we've talked about several times, the role, the job of the offense, at least foundationally to start this season, is to help the defense. It is not to go out there and win games, throw up 35 points and dominate. It is their job right now to control the field and control the where the ball is on the field in order to help the defense, and then we'll go from there.
Who's the left tackle, you think? Because today, Tuesday, it rotated. At first, Ursary was out there at left tackle, and then the next time the offensive line came out with the ones, Cam Robinson was back out there at left tackle.
I think Cam Robinson is going to be the left tackle. I think Ariante Ursary is the right tackle. I think it gives them more options. I think Ariante Ursary is your future left tackle, and the problem is if you put him at left tackle, if Cam doesn't want to play right tackle, then where do you go?
He's a very expensive swing tackle.
Yeah, and it just kind of creates a situation that you don't want. And you, if Cam is on the back end of his career, I wish he would just say, and this is far be it from me, just, all right, I'll extend my career a couple years or two. I'll play right tackle if he can. I understand me saying it's a lot easier than someone going from left tackle to right tackle. Maybe he doesn't have the ability to do that. Ariante says he doesn't care if he's at right tackle, left tackle. I want to do whatever the team wants me to do, mm-hmm. and I'll be good there. Like, he can do both. I think he's the future at left tackle. Tay is. I think Cam Robinson will be the left tackle come week one, I think.
Yeah, no, it feels like that's where it's headed because of a veteran thing. I'll be really curious if they don't put Cam Robinson as a starting left tackle.
What's his role if it's not, if he doesn't want to play right tackle, if that's the case?
We talked about trades. Like, could that be, would you move on from Cam Robinson? That would feel extreme too, because then you're hurting your depth mm-hmm. on this roster, because he's a good swing tackle to be able to, between, you know, him and Ursray, and then you have Titus, like you, and Blake Fisher, who
looked better against the Panthers.
Yeah,
by the way,
we
crapped on him when he was bad against Minnesota. I want to say he was significantly better against the Panthers. So, as I said, you can't trade him before. I certainly still believe that, and even more so now because he's starting to get his feet under him. But DeMeco talked about it too. Like, he's got to be better. He'll still be better.
What do you think are the other? What are you most curious about in terms of with the roster cut down? Because it looks like at the top, like once Mechie's gone, the wide receiver room looks pretty secure mm-hmm. at this point. For me, it's not with the wide receiver room. It's not about who makes it versus who doesn't. It's who has the bigger role. Like, what does Hutchinson's role look like? I mean, it sounds everything I've been reading and seeing, it feels like he's going to be like kind of the third wide receiver, and then Higgins will be coming along past that. But with Kaylee's offense, we're expected to see all of them. So is there another camp battle that you're really intrigued by outside of Arnett and then what's going on with the offensive line?
The depth in that secondary is going to be interesting. Do they trust Damon Arnett on and off the field? Mm-hmm. Was my interview with him truly an insight of how he's changed? Because, listen, you can get lip service, you can be sold a bill of goods 100%, and then a guy goes out to a club and does something stupid. You're one bad decision away from a guy that's made several bad decisions that have been all self-inflicted. Do they trust him off the field? Do they trust him on the field? The secondary depth is going to be very interesting because of CeeDee Johnson and Jimmy Ward situations mm-hmm. as well. One injury-driven, one also self-inflicted legal issues. I think that's where I'm most intrigued. But other than that, like, so much of this roster now has really panned itself out. The biggest question we said last week was the six or seven wide receivers. We now have that answer with John Metchie being traded, which I think was the right thing to do. And you mentioned Jaden Higgins potentially replacing Xavier Hutchinson. Like, he's gone his heels hard. Like, he is coming mm-hmm. fast for that third wide receiver position. And I think Jaden Higgins, I think his floor right now is a little bit lower than Xavier Hutchinson, only because X has been in the league a little longer. But I think soon his floor is going to be higher, and his ceiling is already higher than X's.
Yeah, that's the other one where I think now that as we're seeing it play out, it's okay. Last year, a position group that got rattled with injuries, not that you want to see them, obviously, but if they were to sustain injuries in a similar capacity last year, it does feel like the Texans have better options. Like even going down to like Berrios, where it's like in an emergency situation after a couple injuries, could he go out there and be serviceable for you? It does feel like the answer to that question is yes. And that's a huge box to check in that room. So overall, I'm with you. I think it's pretty, this roster is pretty cut and dry. Like I heard one of the shows talking about, I think it was Sean Mapes was talking about the other day, where I think a lot of times we talk about roster cutdown, that's kind of like the hard knocksification of the NFL, where it's not as important. But even this Texans roster feels pretty cut and dry about who's in, who your starters are, and what everyone's role on this team is going to be week one versus the Rams.
It is now, which is good, because I think going into camp, last year we knew all the starters offensively, and that ended up being a bad thing because there was a lack of depth and the offensive line wasn't any good. This year, we had no idea who the offensive line was going to be. We thought Jarrett Patterson probably at center. Maybe Drew Scruggs. Well, here comes Jake Andrews. Jake Andrews has the ability to get underneath pads and move bodies, and that's what this offensive line wants to do. Cam Robinson at left tackle. All right, well, Arian Thayer, he's a rookie. What does he bring? Oh, my gosh, he might be your best. Where do we put Titus Howard? Laken Tomlinson? Like, there were question marks everywhere. Mm-hmm. What we had was what I wanted most, competition, and finagling it out and twisting it all up and confusing everybody, and then it sorting itself out. So we have went from no idea to got it. Like, we have a pretty good idea who the offensive starting line is, and we have the ability to say, or if not, maybe this guy, because there is more depth.
I'm going to put you on the spot here, okay?
Hell yeah.
What's your biggest hot take for the Houston Texans in 2025?
Oh my gosh. My biggest hot take is that Nick Caley becomes a head coach and that this is a top 10 offense in the league and that they win the Super Bowl. Like, that's the possibility if they do, because that... And that's not crazy, by the way. They're just, we just don't know. We don't, and if you want value bet, I don't know what their odds are to win the Super Bowl, but if you want a value bet, I'll bet you there's not a lot of offenses or defenses that have the ability to be great. We kind of know where they are. The Bengals, for instance, we know their defense needs to not be the worst, and I don't know if they can even do that. So, like, the Bengals just aren't going to win the Super Bowl because of that. Mm-hmm. We know the Texans' defense is going to be one of the best. We think that the offense has started to kind of figure it out, and if they do, there's your lottery ticket. Like, that, there's your ceiling. Now, if they don't, they're still going to the playoffs. They're still going to win the division. Mm-hmm. They can get 10 wins at the minimum, 9. Like, they're going to be in the conversation because they're in a bad division. But if that lottery ticket hits, like, you can be a top 10 offense, and then you can win the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, going back to something you said earlier, you know, if your offensive line goes from a 3 to a 6.5 this year, it already makes things so much easier on C.J. Stroud for this upcoming season. So if you can just get that improvement alone, and then an offensive coordinator who's going to be rolling out some new stuff, and when he gets punched in the mouth and people figure him out, can he counter to what you also said about Bobby Slowick, who couldn't counter? Bobby Slowick had his game plan, and then it didn't work anymore, and he couldn't pivot and figure out where to go next. As long as Caley doesn't get trapped into that, I think there is an argument for the Texans could go to at least the AFC Championship game this year. Like, that, to me, does feel – it still feels plausible. I don't know if it's likely,
it's all about them putting themselves in a position to have that home game,
yes.
Like the ability to stay at home. And with that, I'm trying to pull up the schedule from 2024 and some of the games that they – so they finished 11-8 last year, I guess, with the postseason loss. That loss against the Vikings got their ass handed to them. Mm-hmm. That loss at Green Bay, that should have been a win. Then you lose at the Jets and get absolutely embarrassed, and that was all scheme-driven. Mm-hmm. That loss against the Lions, you have – 5 interceptions?
Yep, 5 interceptions.
5 interceptions and you lose?
In the first half.
26-23 or 5? Like, that's embarrassing. The Tennessee game, you lose to the Titans, you lose to the Chiefs, at the Chiefs, the whole thing with Tank Dell, fine, so be it. And then the Ravens, they're a better team. They beat your ass on Christmas. I mean, that is what I go, 3-4 losses that should have been wins? I mean, that is a massive gap of a team.
That to
me offensive issues.
That to me is the number one thing I'm looking for with the Houston Texans this year, is in the first 2 years of DeMeco Ryans, there have been some really ugly losses that should not have happened. You mentioned the Panthers won last year, both losses to the Jets. Those can't happen this year. If you have goals of being a top 2 seed, being the 1 seed in the NFL, even just not having your fan base feel like, not that everything the fans feel matters, but feel like this team is stuck in the same rut, is you can't lose those games. if you lose to the Ravens and Bills this year and the Chiefs, like, that sucks. You want to beat some of those teams in the regular season. But you cannot afford to keep losing these awful games. And it's what separates coaches eventually and teams. I mean, you know, Brian Kelly is a great example of this. He loses week one every year. Why? I don't know. Marcus Freeman overcame this last year in college, but that's a guy who's lost to Northern Illinois and to Marshall in his career. It makes no sense. So can the Texans avoid those losses this year? That when you play a team that is significantly below your talent level, do you crush them? That to me is, it matters this year. I want to confidently be able to walk into a sports book and the Texans are 7-point favorites and put my money on the Texans.
Yeah.
Last year, no chance I would have done that. This year, I want to be able to do that.
Because you never knew what you were getting. It was a spin of the cap what you were going to get with the offense. You're like, all right, well, I don't know. Do they show up? Do they not? But every year we do this with the best teams in the NFL. Every single year that they play another great team, if it's Bills, Ravens, we're like, ooh, maybe like an AFC championship preview. We don't say the loser, like, oh, man, what does that say about them? We don't say diddly about that because we know they're going to be there. Like, we know that they're going to beat the teams in front of them that they need to beat, and this game's a lot of fun. We don't read into it. With the Texans, we read into the smaller stuff because have they gotten to that point yet? Have they gotten over that speed bump of losing to bad teams? The best teams don't lose to bad teams, and then when they play the best teams in the regular season, it's an event, but then we don't read into it as much because we know that they're going to be there at the end.
Yeah, and then the Ravens game this year, too. That's the other one that...
Yeah, I'm interested, but I'm hoping...
It's got to go better.
It's got to go better. That's for damn sure.
It's like week 6 or 7. It's earlier.
So it's early enough. Like, I'm hoping by then here's what they need to do against the Ravens week 6. Are we getting ahead of ourselves? They need to compete. They have to compete and prove that they're on that level. The Texans right now are trying to prove that they're a competitor. The Ravens, Eagles, Bills, and Chiefs, they don't need to prove anything to us. They don't need to show us anything because when it matters, they're going to be there. Whether they win the Super Bowl or not, obviously, a handful of them can, only one can. But we know that they're going to be competing against each other in the playoffs. We don't know that the Texans are going to be into the second or third week of the playoffs. They got to prove that.
Mm-hmm. Week 5 it is, so we're a week off.
All right, so it's pretty early. Like, I think it's early enough to where the offense should be starting to click and they can compete. But if they played them in week 12, then it's like they better put on a good foot forward.
Now, their schedule does play out favorably where you play week 3, they play at Jacksonville, week 4, they host the Titans. So you have two easier games, I would say.
Lost to the Titans last year.
I know. Exactly.
That's the thing.
That can't happen this year.
Like, we can't go through the schedule and say, all right, I know it's the Titans, but we'll go for a split. It's the division. No, hell no. Mm-hmm. No, not if you're a Super Bowl contending team. There's two. There's two against the Jags, and there's two against the Colts. I watched a video this morning from Ron Rivera talking to his Panthers team in 2014, the year they started 14-0. It was after a preseason game, and they won. But he said he lit his team on fire. He said, if y'all come out there and play a half like that and expect to flip it on against any sort of good team, what you need, if you think you're a good team and you want to be a good team, which we think we are, you need to grab them by their throat and squeeze the daylights out of it until the very end from start to finish. That's how you need to play. You should be embarrassed about what you do. It got me all sorts of fired up, in case you couldn't tell. But that's the mindset the Texans have to have. If you think you're going to beat the Ravens come playoff time, but you can't take care of the Jets or Panthers in the regular season, hell no, you can't just turn it on. And I'll never forget I asked D'Amico Ryans this because it's like a refresh once we get to the postseason, all the conversation kind of changes. Why do you think you can flip it on now? And I was like, why do you think that all of a sudden the offense is going to figure out? Like, that's baloney. We know it's baloney. And I can't remember what he said. He gave probably a good answer, but we saw it. They couldn't just figure it out. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah, I felt like that now looking back on it was him. He's like, it's one of those, if you have nothing nice to say, don't say anything at all. Yeah. Yeah, I think you're talking about expectations for this season. You're always going to lose at least one or two games in the NFL season. You shouldn't lose. We do know.
I get that. 100%.
The Bengals lost to the Patriots in week 1, but it cost them the playoffs by that loss. So, I would say.
It's a short season, man. You got to win what you got to win.
Within this division, I would say I would expect the Houston Texans to go 5-1 in the South this year. Like, you're probably going to lose one game, whether it's to Daniel Jones or Richard Center. Trevor Lawrence, who maybe with a new coach, maybe there's a chance it's better. They could catch you early on. You should definitely not lose to the Titans. But 5-1 should be the expectation in the AFC South this year, for sure.
If they go 5-1, then we're saying, all right. Yeah. They should go 6-0 if they're a Super Bowl contending team, because no weeks off. I understand it's division. I understand the way that goes. I get it. So 5-1, I'm happy with that. But that they go 4-2, that's a sign of bigger things and probably losses elsewhere on the schedule that should not happen either.
Yeah. All right, we'll take our quick break here. When we get back, we'll kind of look through the Texans schedule, some, you know, games that are the most important to win, to lose, some games that are maybe questionable how the Texans will perform. We'll get into that next year. And first, let's hear from our friends at Blue Star Tequila so they can teach you what night harvesting is all about.
In the highlands of Jalisco, as the fierce heat of day fades into dusk, the sun dips below the horizon, and our jimadores begin their work. Harvesting our precious agave azul beneath the glow of stars, while the night air is cool and calm. Away from the harsh heat of the sun, we protect our agave's freshness, locking in essential natural properties and sweetness, and preserving its unique flavor profile. This world-first practice has been warmly embraced by our jimadores, who relish the soothing embrace of evening's cool air as they work beneath the moonlight. 100% agave azul. Night harvested, unfiltered, and additive-free. We invite you to taste the Blue Star difference.
All right, well, let's look through some of the maybe the make or break games on the Texans schedule this year. Ones that will really separate the Texans from being either one of those, you know, being the top seed or being the fourth seed, because we both agree they're going to win the division, but you should have greater aspirations this year than just being the last team to make the playoffs. And, you know, I want the Texans this year to, I want to be part of the battle for that top seed, because it's going to be a close competition. So if they're going to be, let's say, the number one seed versus the number four seed. The first game that I want to look at here that I think is I'm most intrigued by this year, that really to me feels like it can make or break the Texans season, it's really two of them. It's week 8 and week 9. The 49ers game, I have so many questions. What are they going to look like? They've got a ton of injuries. You got Christian McCaffrey coming back. Feels like if it doesn't go well this year, we might hear some crazy takes about Kyle Shanahan in a hot seat.
But hell then have, no.
I know. But
I hope. Well, I mean, whatever. I mean, but anyway. Golly, that's
Nick
crazy.
Haley, you can leave. No, Kyle Shanahan won't be here. But then you have the Broncos game the week after. Those two games are very interesting to me, where I feel like those two teams could be real surprises or real disappointments this year and all. So I think the Texans are definitely going to be better than the 49ers. The Broncos one, though, I'm curious. What do you think the Broncos-Texans matchup? How close do you think these teams are together?
I think they're really close. Like, yeah. I think the Broncos are a very good football team.
I think so, too.
And that's the one that said them and the Chargers, and then Rashawn Slater got hurt, their left tackle, who's an elite left tackle, and that kills them, are the two teams outside the Texans that have that chance of taking the next step into the next tier. So I think that's an interesting one, because they're going to be fighting for, like, who's got that extra win, what happens face head-to-head, because it's worth two games. Like, you give them a loss, you take a win, and if you're fighting for home field, that's what it comes down to. Otherwise, like, that, the Ravens game is the same thing for me, but it's too early for me to put too much on it. Yeah. If that game was in the place of the Broncos, I would feel that way. The Buffalo game, I think, is huge. They're in such a bad division, though, that they could just run away and be the one seed.
That one I like, just because there was a lot of, I think, retroactive excuse making for the Bills. Or maybe not even for the Bills, but like anti-
Well, they had everybody injured.
Yeah, they had a lot of guys injured. Pretty sure Josh Allen got a concussion.
Texans had a whole ton of injuries, and we never heard anyone say anything about that.
Yeah, but you know? Pretty sure Josh Allen got a concussion in that game and played through it last year. So that game on primetime this year also kind of checks that box. Of just, that's week 12. In week 12, you play the Bills. Week 14, you play the Chiefs. So what you're saying about the Ravens, later in the season, that's you're getting close to playoff time. You're getting a real picture of what the Houston Texans are. And those games will really matter to be the one seed this year. You can't afford to go 0-3 this year against the Ravens, Bills, and Chiefs.
No, absolutely not. And so if I had to pick one game, I'm going to pick the Chiefs game, because I think that the Texans are on the heels of being better than the Chiefs. I think they're further away from the Ravens, the Bills, and the Eagles. I think they are on the absolute. I mean, we saw they put up a fight against the refs, against the Chiefs, without Tank Dell, without Jimmy Ward, without Jalen Petrie, without whoever else was hurt. Stephon Diggs wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're on the heels of the Chiefs. So I want them to go into Arrowhead and win that game by 12 points. Like, I want them to prove at that stage of the year, that late in the year, that they are better.
Yeah, Sunday Night Football as well.
Let's go. Like,
that's the primetime games this year are overall a great selection. You got the Bills on Thursday Night Football. You got the Buccaneers on Monday Night Football in Week 2. Really excited about that game. That game's going to be awesome. Mm. Just because I do think you're, like, as great as this Texans defense is, that is a team, like, they're going to be able to test you between...
Who's this?
The Buccaneers.
Between yeah.
Mike Evans, Abuka,
Baker,
Chris Godwin,
Mayfield,
Baker,
like, yes.
Bucky Irving. Like, that's going to be... I cannot wait
and
to go to that game.
And they're more established than the Texans from
for
an
sure.
offensive standpoint. Like, they,
for sure.
they've been together. They've got the same pieces. They know what to do, how to have success. They've been around the league. Like, for sure that. And I want to preface this on what we said earlier in the Swarmcast is us picking these big games, yes, but it all... hinges on the fact that they go 5-1 in the division,
mm-hmm.
that they beat the bad teams. Because I could sit here easily when you ask me, what are the most important games? And I would say to you, at this point, it's Jacksonville, it's Tennessee, it's Seattle, it's Tennessee again, it's the Colts, it's the Cardinals, it's the Raiders, it's the bad teams.
Mm-hmm.
It's those teams because they have to win those. We don't know that they're going to win those games. We know that the Bills are going to take care of that type of business. So I would say... If we're assuming they win those games, then those are the other games that I would pick out as that Bills game,
mm-hmm.
and you want to do Broncos, but they got to take care of business against the crap of the league.
Yeah, I mean, you have 17 games. You play six against a division that's not very good. You play Seattle, who we'll see like what they're like this year. That's a weird one.
Is it home?
9 o'clock Central.
It's at Seattle. Seattle, I never like going there.
They're the doubleheader on Monday Night Football that week.
So that's a
late one for us.
That's a cool one to be like, can they handle it?
Yeah,
because
it's going to be
loud.
Can they go
out there? Have you been there?
I have not.
Dude, it is
It's on my sports bucket list. I have a bunch of stadiums, and like that's one of them.
And Seattle, for all the, you know, horrible issues, is a beautifully, like, God created city. Like, it's gorgeous. The weather, when it's not raining, is awesome. Great place to go. Texans fans, go to that game. Because damn, that's going to be loud.
But you got 6 games versus the division. You got Seattle, so that's 7 games versus teams that are likely to not make the playoffs. The Chargers, the Cardinals. That's 9 games this year versus teams that I feel pretty confident saying right now are not going to make the playoffs in 2025.
And I hammered the over at 9.5.
I did too.
Seems like.
That's
easy
9 games.
Easy money.
Well, there's an argument they could go 7-2 in those games. Like, between the division and then these other 3 games against teams that are definitely inferior to them, that means they'd only have to win 1 game against the Rams, Buccaneers, Chiefs, Ravens, Bills to get to 10 wins. So, like, I think 9.5.
I'm going in again on it.
I'll be honest, I was a little surprised. I thought it was going to be 10.5 this year when we officially knew the teams they were playing, I was like, I think this is a 10.5 win line. So, yeah, I've been playing it.
I bet it again. It's at +115 now, so it's plus money. I went in again.
I think they.
I can't sit here, talk all this, and say the potential is win the Super Bowl, and then I'll put my money where my mouth is. Follow me. Don't come at me if it doesn't happen.
A 9-win season would be a massive disappointment for the Houston Texans.
Oh, boy. Could you imagine a 9-win season with that schedule and what the potential is with this defense? Let's save that conversation for a different podcast because... the fallout from that.
Oh.
But also, like, it's nice to at least be in a situation where 9 wins is a massive disappointment.
Yes. Oh, it's much better than it was a couple years ago. But when you look at their schedule and the expectations for the team, we'll do that maybe next week. But, like, 9 wins would be a huge bummer, I think. And that's why you think about a team that's won.
I can't imagine what we would be watching if it was 9 wins. Like, what's going on? CJ's hurt?
Yeah, and it's one of those where,
we got to stop putting this out there.
It's one of those where, like, that's fake word. But, like, you don't want – even that conversation, though, when I think about if they fall below 10 wins this year, I try to avoid the injury thought because it's like that's just one, like, you can't predict, right? Like,
100%. It's very true.
I got a take for you here, Will.
Oh, God. Can it be positive?
If Davis Mills ran this gauntlet this year, he could still get this team to 9 wins.
So I had the same thought like
because,
a couple
like,
weeks
this
ago.
Because, like, the schedule's not that hard besides, like, would I pick them to win versus beat the Buccaneers or the Rams or the Ravens or the Bills or Chiefs? No. But would I pick Davis Mills and this Houston Texans team versus everyone in the division and the Seahawks and the Cardinals and the Raiders, yeah, like, I definitely would.
This is not.
And I don't love Davis Mills, but there's enough around this team that with the defense being that good, you could go like Trent Dilfer Ravens and make an argument to winning 9 games.
So CJ, I would say over Davis Mills is probably worth 3, maybe 4 wins. I think this defense gets you in position to win at least 8 or 9 games. And then the quarterback just has to be good enough. Mm. It doesn't, again, it's not Joe Burrow with the Bengals where you got to go out and score 38 and still lose. You put C.J. Stroud in that position, he's not going to do what Joe Burrow does. He's not as good as Joe Burrow. Davis Mills, significantly less, if that's what you're relying on him to do. Like, the drop-off is massive. Mm-hmm. With C.J. to Davis, it's not so big, not because C.J. is not that much better than Davis Mills, but we have questions with the offense, and it's a defense-driven team. The defense is going to keep you in games. I mean, for all intents and purposes, C.J. Stroud was a bad quarterback last year as far as how the offense produced. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're the face of what your offense is, the offense was bad. It was a damn disaster in Green Bay. I always go back to that game or the Lions game.
It was awful.
Davis Mills could easily have lost that game. Mm. You know, like, it wasn't because of C.J. It was because of everything. So Davis Mills could get you 9. 8 or 9. CJ can get you 10, 11, 12.
13.
That's over again. Over again!
All right. He's Will Kunkel. I'm Joe George. So next week, this is what we'll do. We'll go through how do the Texans get to 13 wins, how do they get to 14 wins, how do they only get to 8 wins. The good, the bad, the ugly. We'll do that next week here. You can remember, you can find us each week here every Wednesday on the ESPN Houston YouTube channel, as well as the radio version of the show that airs from 7 to 8 o'clock on Wednesday nights. He's Will Kunkel. Where do they find you?
Find me on X. You can find me on Instagram, TikTok. Just type in Kunkel, K-U-N-K-E-L. And of course, as always, find me Kicking It with Kunkel on YouTube. Great interviews, great conversation, a lot of interaction with you guys as well.
I'm Joe George. We'll talk to you guys next week. Thanks for watching. Peace.